Pop quiz, spoiler phobes. You've stumbled upon the Keanu-sense. What do you do? What do you do? This week on Storm of Spoilers, inspired by John Wick 2, being in theaters, we stop to appreciate Keanu Reeves' persistent movie star. We begin discussing John Wick 2, continuation of gun kata action, then we'll transition to a greater discussion that covers most everything, going back all the way to Youngblood, with ample love for things like The Replacements, Bill & Ted's Excellent Adventure, The Matrix Trilogy, and you know, Point Breaks and the other ones I'm not going to list. So get on the bus now, because it can't slow down once we've hit speed. It's the Keanu-sense on Storm of Spoilers.
Hello, and welcome to Storm of Spoilers.
Season 2.
My name is Dave Gonzalez, and whoa.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I'm a plain-dealing villain.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I guess they're saying I'm back. Wait, no, I screwed that up, didn't I? People keep asking me if I'm back. Yes, I'm back. Wow, this is going poorly, you guys.
Well, we could actually just sync and take it all again, but I really like you guys' impression, so I'm going to edit that in.
I don't think we should do it again, but like, and I think it's a perfect sort of representation of the ups and downs and patchiness that have been Keanu Reeves' career.
Way to keep it on subject. You are listening, of course, to the Keanu-sense episode of Storm of Spoilers. But first, we have our traditional beginning duo telling us non-themed things for this week, and Joanna begins with reviews.
Like, the question is, should I do this review in my Keanu impression the whole time?
We did get that question a bunch from...
You're the one who seems to have, like, a good Keanu impression.
Yeah, like, listeners, when we asked if they had questions about Keanu, I believe number 1 through 12 was... Does Joanna have a Keanu impression?
Not a good one, but I do have one. 5 stars. Happy storm. I mean, it's just like, it's like 90s surfer boy Keanu. It's not really like.
It's fine. Just go with it.
I've got 3 podcasts I immediately press play on as a new episode appears in my feed. If all 3 appear in one day, this is the one I pick first. Game of Thrones talk is top notch. This pod has helped me embrace a spoiler and therefore rid myself of spoilerific social media frustration and anxiety. You think you can ruin the Ramsay story for me? Ha! I was celebrating his demise months ago. The off-season tour has been wonderful. I found new shows to watch and new insights into shows I don't follow. These Cast of Warrior nerd rejects are perfect for all you pop pod needs. Also, love the new mailbag episodes. Thanks for making such a great show week after week.
Nice. That was like Ted Point Break.
Yes. I was going for Ted Point Break. Thank you so much.
I could see the little head sides to sides every once in a while.
I was nodding, bobbing my head the entire time. That was like a full-on Wild Stallions Point Break situation. So
nice.
Oh, yes. Leave us reviews on iTunes. Everything under 5 stars. Apparently, Joanna will do any accent because she is much braver than Neil and I, who either are not good at accents or just are working on that one killer accent that we're going to whip out of the bag someday. It'll be great.
Yeah, Neil, we need to get drunker before the...
Or we need to get drunker. That's always
drunk
possibility.
This week, for the record.
For the record.
Yet.
For the record. We'll see where that gets us after we head over to Neil's This Also Happened / Game of Thrones corner, which I believe this week is Game of Thrones corner.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly just Game of Thrones corner this week. Had a tough time filling in. There were very few ravens from the Citadel this week. One item of Game of Thrones news, although this could have been a thing you could have guessed, is that Sophie Turner confirmed in an interview on one of the red carpets recently.
BAFTA.
This week. BAFTA. Cool. The British Academy of Film and Television Arts. Anyway, she confirmed that she's going to be finishing up season 7 shooting soon. She's going to go make a couple of movies. Then she's got to shoot another X-Men movie, and then she's ready. Which I actually I mean, I know they're always making another X-Men movie, but I didn't know that they were like that close to making another X-Men movie.
Oh, Neil, do you want to talk about this X-Men movie that is supposedly titled Supernova and will be featuring Miss Sophie Turner as Jean Grey once again?
Yes,
to control the Phoenix Force.
That's not the star I would hitch my wagon to, X-Men franchise.
Wait, I haven't gotten to the Game of Thrones news yet. The Game of Thrones news is that she said after that, X-Men should be ready for season 8 of Game of Thrones, which confirms that Sansa makes it to season 8, spoiler alert. But she's...
Or she's faking people out, because she got in trouble at the... I think it was the Oscars last year. Mm-hmm. Where she said something about like how she sifted through all the scripts to see if she died, and she didn't. And there was like this big thing. So like, I almost wonder if the Game of Thrones actresses have grown so savvy that they're just like saying things.
Ooh, yeah, that's true. I mean, Hollywood is figuring out how to use fake news.
Yes, so true.
Maybe Game of Thrones will be.
I think she's coming back for season 8.
Yeah, I mean, it seems likely. I feel like if that kind of character dies, it'll be in season 8.
If you haven't seen I don't want to make this creepy, but if you haven't seen what Sophie Turner was wearing at the BAFTAs.
I saw it.
I know you did, Neil. calm down. Speaking to our dear listeners. She looked beautiful. So, like, very, yeah. But her lovely Sansa legs were on full display, and a lot of people noticed that she was sort of covered in bruises all along her legs. And so that led to some wild, completely unfounded speculation that Sansa would have a lot of action at the end of Game of Thrones this season, and B, that like Sophie had filmed a lot of her stunts herself, completely just based on bruises, which she might have gotten from like drinking too much and falling off a boat in Miami. She was on a boat
or
in Miami.
Or just trying to walk in a straight line around your kitchen counter and failing miserably because you're a human being.
Yeah, that's how I get bruises, not from filming spectacular battle scenes. But I mean, if you wanted to go to VanityFair.com, click on the link, and just like see what she wore, because she really does look lovely. And it is, I have to cover all these award show, and usually I write some sort of red carpet post about what the Game of Thrones people are wearing, because it just freaks me out every single time to see Sophie and Maisie continue to grow up. So time is passing, friends.
They grow up so fast. Okay, tell me more about this X-Men movie, because I don't have any more Game of Thrones news.
Well, I could keep it in Game of Thrones and keep it in X-Men, because she isn't the only Stark child that will be filming an X-Men movie this summer, because New Mutants is apparently shooting, and director Josh Boone posted some Maisie Williams' Wolfsbane fan art, which is the closest we've gotten thus far as a confirmation that she actually will be playing that character, just basically like a werewolf at will character. So she'll get to use all her stunt work she's learned pretending to be blind and apply that to actually being blind with Michael Jackson Thriller contacts and playing some sort of wolf girl. It'll be fun.
Oh.
Yeah. Or she'll look like the new Beast, which
I'm sort of into what they're doing with all the X-Men stuff right now. We're going to talk about this in depth
being
later.
Sort of anti-canon, I believe, is an interesting take on a universe, but yeah,
like X-Men. Just kind of chucking continuity or chucking expanded universe. I mean, if that's what they're doing, I have no idea. I haven't seen Logan yet, but it seems like they're just like, who cares about expanded universes? Let's just do characters that people want to see.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about that. We do have a lot of people have been asking, even though I said we were going to do it on air, a lot of people have been asking for a Legion episode. We are going to be doing a Legion/Logan/X-Men episode coming up. So we will, I promise, talk about more then, as well as all the Sophie Maisie connections you could possibly ask for. But I have to say that, like, Neil is completely crazy, because when you talk about what the X-Men are doing, you have to look at the last movie, which was Apocalypse, which was Garbage Town. So
no, was Apocalypse the last? Did that come out before or after Deadpool?
After Deadpool.
Oh, okay.
Deadpool's, I forget. Great. I'm excited about Logan. I love Legion, but Apocalypse is still there, like a wet...
If you told me that X-Men Apocalypse came out in 2014, I would have bought it. Like, that's how unmemorable that whole experience was. It's like...
So unmemorable.
I have no idea when it actually came out. I can tell you who was with me, where I was, what time I saw it, everything about Deadpool, but nothing about X-Men Apocalypse. But I did see it. It was bad.
It was.
All right, cool. So we'll revisit this when we talk about the X-Men in an upcoming, very soon episode.
Indeed.
But yeah, Subterner, congratulations.
Also, why don't they just lean into that theme? It's so recognizable, and it's catchy, and they're like, no, we're just going to keep composing generic nonsense themes that are like riffs on First Class. I mean, I get the impulse.
I don't understand why they don't do that. There are numerous instances where that has worked really well. Mission Impossible has done it several times, where they've redone the Mission Impossible theme. And Speed Racer comes to mind, the score for Speed Racer. So
there's also hints that there's going to be a rocking new Power Rangers theme somewhere in the score of Power Rangers, but maybe I'm the only one who's excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could also say the same thing for the first Transformers movie. What was it, Mute Math? That did a Transformer. I mean, it was, but that's kind of the idea, though. Is like you take the original song and you sort of weave it into something more modern, or
Or you're Metallica and you're like, I think Mission Impossible 2's theme song should be "I Disappear" by Metallica.
I mean, listen, there was a lot wrong with that movie. I would put the Metallica song, and I don't even like Metallica. The Metallica song's fairly low on the list of problems in Mission Impossible 2.
Fair enough, but let's pivot off of well-directed gun violence.
I got distracted for a second, and when I started paying attention to you again, you were talking about Mission Impossible 2, and I'm gonna have to listen to the episode to find out how you got it.
Yeah, wait till you hear about the Metallica part.
Okay. Yeah, you get to go back through all that riveting podcasting. As here in the present, we push forward into the Keanu-sance. Keanu Reeves coming back this week in your theaters with John Wick 2. This week being like he's currently in your theaters this week, having come out last week.
He's literally waiting for you in your theater.
Yeah, literally waiting for you. I didn't get a chance to catch it this week. Neil, did you see John Wick 2?
Hell yeah.
And you gotta tell me how it was, because the first John Wick was like a breath of fresh action air
a
few years ago.
So here's the thing about John Wick. I wrote a big full-on review for Film School Rejects. If anyone wants to go read it, I love clicks. But the other thing, have you seen The Raid and The Raid 2?
I've seen The Raid, but I've not seen The Raid 2.
Okay, I'm trying to think of another action franchise that does this, where it basically picks up immediately after the first one. So the first scene we see is John Wick tying up the one last loose end of the first movie, which is he has to go get his car from wherever his car was sent when it was stolen and chopped up, or not chopped up, just kind of like put into the system of criminal enterprise.
Right, right. Because it's stolen, and then he goes after the guy, and the car sort of disappears into the background.
Because of Theon Greyjoy.
Because Theon Greyjoy stole his car.
Right.
So it's funny because it feels very, very literally like an extension of the first movie in this sequence where we see that the brother of the main bad guy from the first movie, played by Peter Stormare, is like explaining to his lieutenant why John Wick.
Like he was gone, and then his son came back, and then favors were all taken back, and everybody had to fight each other.
Right, he's basically catching him up on why it was a bad idea that they have John Wick's car. And it's this ridiculous action sequence that involves a lot of punching and shooting and punching and people getting hit by cars a lot. Like, I feel like Keanu gets hit by like 47 cars over the course of this movie, and for some reason, never gets hurt. Which is exactly what we want from our action stars, right? We want invincibility, but some plausibility. Like, we want them to be super tough and survive things that humans normally do survive. Like, getting hit by a car at a low speed doesn't kill everyone. You know, anyway.
Right. Well, wait, I mean, this is an interesting argument to make with Keanu Reeves specifically, because as his roles have advanced and as, like, time and computer graphics has advanced, he has to be the barometer between, like, physical effects and rubber effects and, like, Matrix Revolutions. There was just no way around it. So it's like, yeah, that is. I'm sure he wasn't hit by stunt cars all the time, but it might be, like, digital doubling.
Maybe.
To get a better impact that way.
If we're talking pixels. Anyway,
yeah,
so
we're
the
talking pixels.
if we gotta talk polygons, then you know
the other thing I wanted to say is that it's excellent. So it's one of those movies that opens up the scope of the first movie's world, which I thought was really interesting, because the first John Wick had these sort of interesting corners of this universe, like the hotel where assassins go, but they can't kill each other on hotel grounds, so they get like banned. And it sort of opens up this world of assassins, and of course it gets drawn back in, and it is just as hyper-violent, well-choreographed, kinetic as the first film. It's just obviously more expensive. Like, they just clearly had a lot more money this time, and so you get, instead of, you know, a big fight scene in a warehouse, you get this grand, like, Roman castle structure where there's this huge action sequence. So that's really the only difference. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same movie, with just more of the things that you liked.
So wait, he just needs to get his car back?
Well, no, so that's just the opening scene. Ends up happening is that somebody from this underground of assassins sort of has an IOU, a very classy assassin IOU from John Wick. Like, apparently this guy helped him achieve the impossible task that was mentioned in the last movie.
All right, yeah. I'm in the world building now.
Right, and now this guy's back, this Italian guy is back to cash in the favor and get John Wick to go assassinate someone high-powered so he can sort of take over. And so, you know, it's funny because the story of John Wick, the first John Wick, sort of innovative in the way it tells the story of the, you know, guy who was out, dragged back in. This one is way more simple. It's about the guy who goes to do a job and then gets caught up in the crossfire afterward as the person who contracts him is trying to tie up loose ends. So, you know, and you don't, like, if there's one person you don't want to cross, and, like, if there's one loose end, maybe you should just let go.
It's the titular character.
It's probably going to be John Wick, yeah. So, really good.
Interesting, because he would know, having helped with the favor, but yes, you got me. You put a hook in me, Neil.
Yeah, there's...
You put a hook in me for John Wick.
I will
Wick
say
too.
This, the one thing that I've been impressed with, beyond it just being good, fun action, is there's a lot of really clever world building in the two John Wick movies. And that's what impressed me. That's why I bring up The Raid, because The Raid, they had this very simple premise in the first movie where it's just about these cops trying to get the bad guy and it all goes to shit. And then in the second movie, they expanded it to make this really interesting, like, gangster movie. So, you know, it's John Wick 2 is like the international intrigue of assassins movie version of John Wick 1. So cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, I dug it.
And it's doing well enough that there's potential for a John Wick 3 coming up.
Yeah, the movie,
they probably want to do it.
They definitely suggest at the end. I mean, it's funny because in John Wick 2, you start off and like one guy's after him. But as you go further, and now if we go into a John Wick 3, literally everyone's after him now. There's no peace in this man's world. There's never going to be peace for John Wick.
I would do a trilogy capper that's one big chase movie. I think, like, that was what impressed me with, like, the first John Wick movie, is when I was expecting it to turn into something bigger, it would just refocus to like, no, I'm going to kill you and your son. And I was just like, oh. And then, you know, that happened. And it seemed like I was able to keep that pure focus, even with a little bit of Willem Dafoe side plottery. So I could see if it's able to like expand to make this like Assassin's universe, and then allow that to then have a very simple focus moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'd be afraid that it then just becomes like John Wick's like legend James Bond for the third one.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way Resident Evil like picks up like it, like I don't know, like months after like the previous one and changes like everything. But it sounds like John Wick's not interested in doing that.
Yeah, yeah. I did leave John Wick 2 feeling like there is still parts of this fictional world that are yet to be explored. And I think that that's cool. I would watch like 10 more John Wicks, obviously.
But two people that I know have been somewhat concerned by the gun violence in the movie, one of which is Jordan Hoffman, who we talked to at Fighting in the War Room. I think the other was Patches. I don't know how concerned he was. He said it was weird they had like an AR-15 at the end and it made him feel something, but then he went on his honeymoon and I didn't get to hear the conclusion of those thoughts. Did any of that bother you, or was it sort of like stylized, choreographed fighting in a way that you didn't...
Yeah, that's interesting. And this actually goes to a question that we got. We could do this, because I actually would like to hear what you guys have to say, because I have my own thoughts about violence in movies. But we did get a question from a listener named Sarah at SG Wingo on Twitter, basically saying that, you know, Keanu has been in a lot of movies in which there is a lot of gun violence. And that seems to go against kind of like his persona or his more philanthropic presence.
Because
he's actually known, he's rumored to be a Buddhist, which I don't think has ever been confirmed or denied, but he's also known around Hollywood as one of the more generous stars. Like, he gives a ton to charity, he does a lot for children's charities, and for, you know, for causes around poverty. So you would think that someone like that, bleeding heart liberal, would maybe sort of have an aversion to that sort of thing. But I've always been of the mind that actors especially, or really, you know, most artists, have the ability to sort of compartmentalize these things, where it really is very much fiction in their minds. And I do think it's interesting that you sort of get into this. I feel like once you've been on a movie set, you realize how fake movies are, like how just painfully fake movies are. So I think it's easier to kind of separate the two. Whereas if you're coming at it from an audience only perspective, that might be hard, because, you know, you're seeing the final product, you're seeing what looks to be a very real, very violent, very pro-violence or pro-gun violence product. But I don't know if that comes across to the people who are making it as they make it. I feel like they probably have a better sense of like detachment between starring in something that's very violent and, you know, not being for real violence. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's different ways to portray violence, but as far as like the actors being in it, you can't help but be desensitized to it, because it's usually like so well rehearsed, either because it's physically difficult or because there's a technical aspect of the shot that needs to be just right, that I can't imagine you'd want to spend all of that time in the headspace of what if this, you know, was really happening, unless you have to. Like, I don't think Keanu Reeves was shooting like The Matrix, you know, like a gun battle slow motion scene and being like, I'm really killing these digital beings. So, but that was 1999, and his film happened to get released alongside Columbine. And so, like, you know, weird connections have to be made. And I don't think he can be held responsible for that. I think he can sort of be held responsible for like sequel choices if he wants, but I don't like personally hold Keanu Reeves responsible for glorifying gun violence.
He is an interesting test case along those lines because he did. You're right about, and I kind of forgot that that was all around the same time. But in, you know, in 99 when The Matrix came out, and then Columbine, and then the whole like trench coat mafia thing. I remember that being very specific, and there was this very specific sort of style or look that people who were angry, young white men who were angry, let's just go with that, would kind of go with. And that, you know, that's tough because you would think that would weigh on an actor. But here he is, what, 17 years later, still shooting them up. So I think it's interesting. I do think it's also interesting that among his activisms, guns is not one of them, which I think is one way to sort of offset that is to be very active. And, you know, if I'm a big action star, to then be very active on the subject of gun control, would help people separate the two, you know, help people separate the fiction from like reality. Man, this got political real quick, guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's Joanna.
Oh, I didn't know if you guys wanted me to talk on this episode.
It's funny. I was just about to type in the chat.
Burns her way through. Yeah.
Did we lose Joanna?
No, I just like blew past John Wick 2 without talking. That's fine. Okay.
Joanna, what did you think of John Wick 2?
I loved it. I'm so glad that I took the time to go see it so I could talk about it on this podcast.
Sorry.
No, it's a great movie. It's okay. I could have put it in.
We're not off John Wick 2, I don't think.
No, we're still on John Wick 2 and then politics.
I will agree that when I saw the poster for John, like, you know, John Wick isn't just like any action movie, right? It's what they call gun kata, which is like not just some gun violence, but all gun violence all the time. And
gun fu.
Is it gun fu? I thought it was gun kata.
People, I've seen it both. I call it gun fu, but a lot of people online call it gun kata, which I don't understand what that is.
I think it's like a reference to an old movie that I think had like a gymkata.
Is it gymkata?
I know that because there's a gymkata joke in Lego Batman.
Oh, it is. It was created by Kurt Wimmer, who did gymkata.
So that's where the kata abbreviation. But foo would be more towards like, I guess, the Matrix era when we talked about it.
I mean, I learned about gun kata from the 2002 film Equilibrium with Christian Bale, which is where it like sort of gets its.
So there you go,
right?
Gun kata.
Yeah. Hey, if you do a great if you do a mashup on your website of good gun fu, and you leave Equilibrium off, you will hear about it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, Equilibrium is a great movie that so few people have seen. But okay, here's what I will say about. I almost did a piece about this, but why type all these words when I could just say them into a microphone, which is that like when the poster for John Wick 2 came out, and I love John Wick 1, but when John Wick Chapter 2 poster came out and it's like a million guns and Keanu in the middle of it, right? And then I think that poster came out right around the time that the first trailer for Free Fire came out, and which is also a very gun heavy, but like, yay movie, right? And then like Shooter, which was the USA Network adaptation of, you know, that no one asked for, starring Ryan Phillippe, that had to be pushed because there were just too many shootings in America and they couldn't premiere Shooter. You know, all this sort of like happened around the same time and made me think about like, yeah, at one point, like, I agree with you, Neil, that of course, like, Keanu Reeves doesn't condone gun violence. I would think he would probably be in favor of gun restrictions. I think you're right that when you're shooting a heightened, I mean, John Wick doesn't even take place in our reality. And so, like, when you're shooting such, like, a heightened film, you can divorce yourself from that. But I don't think that's the real issue. The issue isn't what Keanu Reeves thinks of gun violence. To me, the issue is, what does glossy, fun lovely action films like John Wick 2, which is glossy and fun and lovely. What does that do to someone who doesn't have their head straight on straight about guns? You know, like, and it goes back to the age old question that, you know, at least I've been debating since middle school, which is like, can we blame video games for violence? Can we blame films for violence? You know, you guys were talking about the Columbine and the Trenchcoat Mafia and all of that. Like, are we allowed to blame art for violence? And I don't really think of it as like a blame thing, but I don't think you can completely wash your hands of any, complicity in creating a culture in the U.S. at least, where gun violence is glamorized to a certain extent, because that's what John Wick does. Not intentionally, like that's not what it's for. I don't think that's what anyone creating it, you know, I doubt they think that way about guns. You know, Neil, I, Dave, we can all go see this movie and not have our minds changed about guns, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't contribute to a narrative about gun violence. Like I was saying before, that we've been debating this. I've been debating this at least since middle school, where like, is it fair to blame art, video games, whatever, the Matrix, blah, 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 for real world violence? I don't think it's fair to blame, but I don't think you can divorce the two entirely. I think if you make something like John Wick 2, even if you're Keanu Reeves and the people who make it, and even if you have, very rational, you know, restrained ideas about gun control and all that sort of stuff, you are still just by making it complicit in creating a culture that has a glamorized idea of guns and shooting. Because like a lot of the people who fight for their gun rights are not the people, you know, who fight to keep, you know, the right to bear arms, et cetera, whatever you want to say. Are not people who want to go murder people. They're people who just want their guns because going to the shooting range is fun and cool. Like all the guys who I know who own guns go to the shooting. They don't even shoot, like, you know, they don't even go duck hunting or whatever. They go to the gun range and shoot guns because they think it's cool. And they think it's cool because they've seen people in movies do it. So, you know, and that's what's keeping, I think, our legislation where it is. So, I don't know. It's all related to, I don't think you can separate one from the other, as far as I'm concerned.
That's a very interesting point. I do think that you're right. I would agree that you can't make a movie like this any kind of movie like this and not feel like you're feeding the beast that is like our fetishization of gun culture. But I'm also a big personal responsibility guy. In that it is our responsibility as people, citizens, humans, to not kill people. And even if you are like a gun person, like I know, you know, I have family members who are hunters, and I have friends who are, you know, sportsmen. We don't hang out a lot because I'm not a sportsman. I think that there's, you know, there's just a level of personal responsibility that we have to take when it comes to these things. You know, it's on each individual person not to go out and kill people. That'd be pretty great if people just decided not to. But you're right that you can't make a movie like this and be totally clean. It's a weird place for me as a fan because I am a person who I have no use for interest in owning a real gun or shooting a real gun or touching a real gun, except for I did skeet shooting one time and I was pretty good at it. So I thought that was pretty cool, but, I love action movies. I love John Wick. I love movies where, bad, terrible, awful things happen to people because it's fiction and that's safe. Like that's my safe space to enjoy that stuff.
I love John Wick as well. I want to be clear. Like I have like an intense phobia of guns. I will not touch a gun. They freak me out. And, I've had this guy who's a cop, like try to force me to like hold his gun. It was one of the most disturbing experiences of my life.
It's a weird way to flirt.
Yeah, it was really upsetting. he's like, I took all the ammunition out. I was like, that matters zero to me.
Yeah, still don't want it.
Don't want to touch your gun. And
so, maybe it was a metaphor.
Yeah. Having said all that.
Then I didn't want him to take all the ammunition out. what was he just doing?
But having said, I mean, that is a true story that happened to me, like in a hotel room. It was very upsetting. But like, having said all that, like, I love John Wick and John Wick 2. Like, and I'm really looking forward to Free Fire. Like, I don't mean to be a hypocrite and say, like, these aren't good or enjoyable movies. I'm just saying, like, there's a cost to it in our culture, I think. Like, you know, other people will say, like, oh, does that mean, like, movies about serial killers make serial killers a movie about, you know, like, I don't know.
But I mean, it depends on how detailed the movie is.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, honestly.
Could be used as a manual for a serial killer, maybe.
But, you know, like, you know, our culture glamorizes gun use. Our pop culture does that. There aren't a lot of cautionary tales about gun violence. There are some, but they're bummers to watch, and we don't watch them. We'd rather watch John Wick, of course. So,
right. Although, are we sure that John Wick isn't also a cautionary tale? Because I will tell you, one thing I will never do is steal a random dude's car and kill his dog.
Because you're going to do that.
Did you need John Wick to stop you from doing that before?
I had never thought of not doing that. I had never considered it as an option.
Disabling somebody's car in order to steal their dog.
I had never considered that to be on the table. But I can tell you, after seeing John Wick, it's off the table. So, you know, maybe we can learn things. I mean, it's just like, I'm not going to go out and learn some weird dance moves like in the OA to try and stop a school shooting. Like,
yeah,
it's fiction.
I mean, I don't think that's, I don't know.
No, I mean, that's terrible. I'm being ridiculous.
I usually don't try to get into this side of the fight, having lived in Colorado through Columbine part and also been like a teenager that like played video games and listened to heavy metal. I was very argumentative with all adults around me, but I will say that as I grew older, I realized that my anger at the American culture about guns and how we regard them was better directed off pop culture and onto other things. But that's just how I ended up dealing with it, which is sort of like not dealing with it.
Yeah,
I haven't had a moment like Patches had, where it's like a very specific gun pops up in a movie, you know, or the sommelier is fetishizing something and I get like that weird feeling in the pit of my stomach. When I do, I'll like definitely probably turn on it or reevaluate where I stand, but that just hasn't happened to me yet.
I'm not mad at John Wick, and I don't think John Wick was created irresponsibly necessarily. I'm not comfortable with divorcing it entirely from the larger narrative. Does that make sense? Like, I'm not saying John Wick should be banned. I don't know. I think I've made that clear. I like the movie.
Do you find that you feel the same way about like Fast and Furious and sort of the fetishization of reckless driving? Like, I feel like that to me, that it feels very similar.
Yeah.
But I think it's always been easier for me to deal with when it is done in such a ridiculous manner. Like like John Wick, Fast and Furious, even The Raid, they're so ridiculously over the top that it's like, man, I would really, like, it would really take someone who's pretty disturbed already to start taking notes here.
Well, like, by that route, but Fast and again, Furious movies get better, because the first Fast and Furious, if anyone is going to be the one that, you know, glamorizes street racing, it'd be that one. But then by the time you get to Too Fast, Too Furious, there's like CGI tunnels underneath parts of wherever. So I kind of feel like we were playing on a different road.
Different world, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Wow, guys, this got super political. No.
Guns. Let's get
back to talking about just Keanu. All the grace that goes to Keanu, because there's so much more to him than gunfights.
Well, can I share a personal anecdote?
Yes.
It's not about meeting Keanu, because I never have. I don't know what I would do. But I just want to let you know that my best friend and I, and I've gotten some of my coworkers at VF to do this too. We call him Saint Keanu. And sometimes Saint Keanu full of grace. because like my best friend, I usually jump on her in terms of pop culture knowledge, but she's the one who informed me about like the very like terrible personal tragedies that happened to Keanu Reeves, like sort of back to back, where like his girlfriend miscarried and then she died shortly thereafter. And this wasn't like hugely publicized because people know about it, but like he's a very private person. But like it made that sort of whole sad Keanu meme like a tiny bit distasteful, I guess, because he did have this like very personal tragedy. And I think most of the people who sort of were perpetuating the meme didn't know that or didn't connect it or whatever. But I'm like, he kind of is sad. And then exactly as Neil alluded to earlier, he is famous in Hollywood, I mean, ironically, for anonymously donating to all these causes. He gives almost all of his money away and doesn't ask for credit. And like you're like, well, if he doesn't have credit, how do people know? Well, I mean, I don't know. They know. But like he very famously
does anyone know anything?
He does not parade around his philanthropy. He just quietly sort of does it. And Katie Rich, friend of the podcast, my boss of Vanity Fair, she told me this story. She was at the Chateau Marmont in Los Angeles, like I think 2 years ago, maybe last year. And she said Keanu Reeves was there when she was there. And every single person who came to the door greeted him like he was the mayor of Los Angeles. Like everyone was just like going up and saying hi, and not famous people, like people she didn't recognize who were probably like powerful, but like, and then would go sit at their table. Like every single person went to say hi to Keanu Reeves, not in like a, oh my God, can I take your photo? But like he knows everyone and everyone knows him and everyone likes him. And so I think of him sometimes as the mayor of Los Angeles and also as St. Keanu full of grace. So like that's part of, you know, one of the questions we got was a sad Keanu meme responsible or partially responsible for the Keanu songs? And I, like for me personally, like I wasn't an enormous Matrix fan. I like the Matrix a lot, who didn't, but like it didn't blow my mind. I love Speed a lot because I was in middle school and it was a perfect middle school movie. But like I never loved Keanu until I found out about St. Keanu, and then like shortly thereafter John Wick came out, and I was like, it was the perfect sort of confluence of personal celebrity star information and really, really, really good movie. So yeah.
Oh, interesting. So you're fairly new to being like, I'll watch what the Keanu Reeves in this. Let's see what this is about.
I'm not gonna lie. Like I've seen a lot of Keanu Reeves movies, and I love Bill and Ted. I mean, but like when he first started, you know, when we were quite young, he was sort of like a lovable cartoon. And then there was like a while where, he mistakenly, or producers or directors mistakenly, like tried to get us to take him like very seriously. I was, you know, I'm talking about like the costume dramas, like Bram Stoker's Dracula or whatever, where he's like hideously miscast in like a bunch of stuff.
Sure, but like, weren't you like young and just like, there's Keanu Reeves?
No, I wasn't that kind of girl. Like I was a Ewan McGregor girl. I wasn't a Keanu Reeves girl.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And
forgot about Ewan.
But like, you know, Ewan's like talented, like, and Keanu Reeves is just like a sort of a dreamy, I'm in Paula Abdul music videos. It's not really something that like did it for me. Speed is like a beautiful piece of like pop pulp art, and my friends and I could quote it backwards and forwards. Like
pop quiz hot shot.
Yeah, exactly. Like I, you know.
Okay. So here, I would disagree.
That's my Keanu relationship.
I would disagree a little bit, because you said you made a very blasphemous statement there, saying Ewan McGregor is like a real actor and Keanu Reeves is just like a pretty face.
I'm sorry. That's not exactly what I meant, but okay.
But I do think that this he gets sort of saddled with this all the time, where people don't think that he's sort of like a joke actor, where it's like, oh, Keanu Reeves, he's in all these weird, he's just this kind of weird guy who shows up in these movies. But I think that there is something really interesting to the way he performs as an actor. There's something really interesting to how malleable he is, but how familiar all of his stuff is. Like you kind of, you get the vibe of he's got the same vibe seemingly in almost every movie. But he also has played such a wide variety of characters. And I also think that he is very underrated for his subtlety, which I think is something that, you know, you don't get a lot of, you know, like, for example, I knew Ewan McGregor was a good actor when he was in like Moulin Rouge or Trainspotting, because those are like big acting pieces where he's doing these dynamically different things. Whereas Keanu sort of played a kind of an even keel throughout his career with these very subtle variations.
I think it's a mistake to try to compare Ewan and Keanu, honestly.
I definitely don't want to go too far down this road.
But like, I'm more meant, and I'm sorry, David, I don't mean to cut you off. I want to hear what you say, but I'm more meant just like, I agree with you. I don't think he's a bad actor. I think, you know, one of my favorite questions that we got, in this episode was from Kathy, I believe it was. Let me get her Twitter handle. Which is at Kathy Vilgos. I might have bungled that. But anyway, she says, how do we embrace Keanu's emotional blankness and use it to create a delightful romantic lead role for him? And I'd say it's not just delightful romantic lead role. I'd say all of his roles have to do with us sort of laying something over his emotional blankness. And I think you're right that that can be mistaken for bad acting. And I don't think he's a bad actor, but I think he does have... It's not like a Daniel Day-Lewis where he's like a chameleon or like just completely tapping into some sort of emotional honesty or whatever. You know, he just does have, I think, malleability, which is the word you use, is a good one, where he's just like, he's kind of like putty, and you can sort of put something on him that you want to see in this role. And he's doing some work on that, but like, you're doing a lot of work yourself, and that's okay, because in the end, you know, it works out. Dave, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I basically agree with both of you in that I think Keanu Reeves meets whatever project he's given, like, at its, you know, whatever it is. It's not like I've like, need to see him in a Shakespeare adaptation and need to see him, like, make a really strong choice with the character or something. He's not your Johnny Depp or, like you were saying, like, Daniel Day-Lewis, who's just gonna, you know, be like, well, in this movie, I have a scar on my nose. Which he'll just come up and meet it. So when he is the everyman character and you're, you know, I don't know, the devil's advocate or whatnot, it's really easy to lay yourself over. But I don't think it's him deciding not to make unnecessary choices makes him a bad actor.
No.
I just don't think I've ever seen anything from him where I'm like, that deserves some sort of trophy for what he came up with for that moment.
I think he's really good at what he can do, and I think it's okay for us to support him and recognize the upper limits of his talent. You know what I mean? Like, there are things he can't do, but some of the things he does do are, like, completely delightful and enjoyable and entertaining.
Because, see, here's the thing. He is malleable... And this sort of goes back to the where this all started, which is that he is also sort of an elemental action star. We started, I think, a few weeks ago when we were prepping this, or last week maybe, talking about the Mount Rushmore of action stars and how Keanu is on it. And we did a piece on Film School Rejects where we created the Mount Rushmore of action stars. And ours was John Wayne, Tom Cruise, Harrison Ford, and Keanu. And the idea is that they are all sort of elemental. And Keanu movies, like especially his action movies, are hard to imagine without Keanu. I think. Like, it's hard to me to imagine The Matrix with Johnny Depp. Like, it would be a weirder, you know, I don't know if it'd be better or worse, but it's just, it's hard to imagine anybody but Keanu.
Well, I think the blankness of Keanu works so well for Neo. And I don't, mm-hmm. like, I agree with you. I'm trying to put, like, Tom Cruise or anyone else, like, in that role. And I'm just like, no, because they would be too much. And I just want very little from Neo, to be honest with you. So, like,
this is why we equated Keanu to the air, the element of air.
I will reassert that there are things, and it's not the Shakespeare. I think he's actually very good at Much Ado About Nothing, which is one of the best, no, it is the best, I think, film adaptation of a Shakespeare play. With Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson and Kate Beckinsale and Robert John Leonard and Denzel Washington. Because his character, Don John, is a cardboard character. That's a cardboard villain. I've seen tremendous actors play that character on stage, and you can't do anything with it. So the fact that he plays him as, like, the line is, I'm a plain dealing villain. Like, the fact that he just plays him as just, like, evil without any real, real good nuanced substantive motivation. It's perfect. And then he's, like, shirtless and oiled up in a massage scene. And I'm like, why not? Okay, Keanu, sure. If Denzel Washington can be a prince in this play, then you can be his bastard brother. It's fine with me. I'm okay with it. But stuff like Dangerous Liaisons or Bram Stoker's Dracula, as I mentioned, A Walk in the Clouds, that was a terrible miscast. You know, like, these are just not good fits for our Keanu. When we want to see him in your Bill and Ted's, in your Speeds, and maybe your Johnny Mnemonics, depending, your mileage may vary. So,
right,
you know, and like, well, my other question for you guys is, what do you think of sort of his independent? Well, my own Private Idaho is sort of brought up a lot. That's not a movie that has ever worked for me. But he also does stuff like Thumbsucker, where he plays a dentist in, like, this super weird indie movie. Like, you know, Keanu does, like, these weird indie projects.
Right, and he did, like, A Scanner Darkly, which is just one of the weirdest movies.
I love A Scanner Darkly.
It's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does, I think Keanu really is, you know, you think about some of the big stars of our, generation of this sort of 90s, late 80s, 90s, 2000s. And you think of some, like, really big stars, you know, like Tom Cruise is just always making a huge movie. But I think Keanu is the ultimate, like, I just do what I want guy. Like, he's just out there doing what feels right at the moment. And he's not super worried about, you know, whether it's good, I guess. But mostly he's not worried about, like, he just pops up in random small movies. Like, if you think about, like, this year, he's in John Wick 2, which is his thing. It was built for him. He's also going to be in Anna Lily Amirpour's The Bad Batch, which, to answer one of our questions, somebody asked, when is it coming out? June 23rd is when it's coming out.
Oh, nice.
And then he was also in a Sundance movie, To the Bone, where he co-stars with, I think, Lily Collins. It's like this.
It's like an anorexia movie.
It's a movie about anorexia. Yeah. It's like this Marty Noxon movie, like awards baity, dramedy type thing. Yeah. So he just sort of does whatever feels good to Keanu, which I think is, you know, like he showed up in the Neon Demon sort of randomly.
I mean, it's so funny because I am looking at his CV and, you know, we're calling this the Keanu songs, but, like, mm-hmm. he did John Wick. I love right. John Wick. You know, like, there's a bunch of people I know who love action movies didn't see John Wick until John Wick 2 was coming out. A bunch of them watched it this week. And they're like, oh, my God, this is so good. I was like, yeah, guys, where the hell were you for John Wick when it was in the theaters? Anyway, so, like, but, you know, we were on board for John Wick. But then, like, the credits chronologically afterwards are Knock Knock, Deep Web, Exposed, a voice role in Keanu, The Neon Demon, The Bad Batch, which you said is not out yet, The Whole Truth, which I don't even know what that is, and then To the Bone, and then John Wick Chapter 2. I haven't seen any of those except for Keanu. So, you know, that's like he did a bunch, but are we watching it? you know.
Yeah, and that brings us to another question that I didn't put on here, apparently.
Oh.
Which is this the only... apologies to whoever sent it in, because I didn't write it in the notes, and I totally forgot who sent it. But is this the only Keanu-sans? Maybe the secret is the Keanu-sans has always been happening.
Well, I mean, there was a really fallow period, I would say, between, like, what, the Lake House and John Wick? Because the Lake House was 2006, and I can't think of a single...
Well, there was a series of failures.
Yeah.
And then there was... Okay, so there was a series of interesting failures in, like, The Day the Earth Stood Still, which, just awful, offensively awful movie.
Right.
It was also, like... he did A Scanner Darkly that year. He did Street Kings, which sort of didn't... I mean, it's actually not that bad, but didn't quite kill it. And it really... He didn't get, at least for me, he didn't get interesting again until he directed Man of Tai Chi in 2013. Because even around then, he was still... Like, this is a year before John Wick. This is like when 47 Ronin came out.
Right.
And it was like, man, Keanu, what are you doing, man?
What are you doing, buddy? Yeah.
So you're right. There is a period of like from basically 2006 to 2013. So like a 7-year period where,
right.
It almost felt like right after The Matrix.
Well, and depending on your feelings about Constantine in 2005, and I think the nation is sharply divided on Constantine because there's a lot of people I know who really love it. But like there was.
They really love Constantine?
Yeah.
I like Constantine.
Oh, they're wrong.
I don't think it's bad. I mean,
no,
it's not
bad. It's not Constantine. It's a very interesting angel movie about a guy who puts his feet in water.
Yeah, like I never. It's funny. Maybe I liked it because I had no attachment to the character Constantine, like the other versions of Constantine. I was just going into it as a blank.
I was going to bring this up in terms of like roles that I think he really like underplayed when he shouldn't have. Is like,
oh, that's,
Constantine
that's one of them.
Could have been like so much bigger and been fun. He could have met Tilda Swinton at her level in that movie, and it would have been much more fun.
John Constantine is supposed to be very charismatic.
Yes,
and you know, you can't.
This guy's just depressed.
Neo. Yeah, you can't be Neo. It's Constantine. You just can't. And you can't look nothing like it's not. It's
well,
not
and I do think
really.
That there was this period after The Matrix where he's been malleable throughout his career, but there were some projects where they didn't use him that way. And you could file these under that. You could file Day the Earth Stood Still under that because he's. I mean, as Klaatu, he's. I don't know, not great. And the
well, I mean, everything sort of in that period, you could hypothesize it's like him attempting to transition into something else and just having to figure out what that is.
Can I ask?
And then, you know, Hollywood, like 47 Ronin took forever to come out, and Hollywood takes long enough. He could have just been like working up to Man of Tai Chi from 2006, and that wouldn't be unheard of.
Can I ask you guys, like, like an on topic but side question, which is, Joanna Robinson at Joe wrote this, wants to know like what the Keanu Reeves movie that you think does not get as much love as it should. Like what's the undervalued? I'll go first while you guys think.
Yeah.
Mine would be The Replacements. Football movie, because it's great.
Sort of mine too.
Mine could be Hardball. Which is terrible, but I saw it on a really good date at like a drive-in movie theater, and it was really, really enjoyable.
We already talked about A Scanner Darkly, but that would possibly be my answer, only because I believe my real answer is nobody ever values Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure for what it fully is as a time travel movie and as a comedy.
Oh, it's so good. I rewatched it like at the end of last year. I was like endlessly delighted by it.
Oh, for sure.
A lot of people on our timeline wanted to make sure that we bring up Parenthood, which is an early entry into the Keanu CV was 1989, so it's after Bill and Ted's it's the same year as Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where he plays Martha Plimpton's boyfriend slash baby daddy, and he is actually really, really good in that movie. It's like Ted, but you know, Ted Theodore Logan, but like transplanted into an adult dramedy. And yeah. it somehow works. So
wait. There's a little Keanu Sans there from 89's Excellent Adventure to what? Point Break in 91.
Yeah.
That's a nice little spat where he has that and Parenthood and more Bill and Ted's TV series and a Paula Abdul video short. Okay, maybe not.
Rush, man. That's an important part. Rush, which is a Rebel Without a Cause. Takeoff, which is like very gauzy and oh man, I watched that Rush video a lot. I mean, I know that I like just tried to be above like the Tiger Beat Keanu of it all, but like I love Paul Abdul. Paul Abdul is very Opposites Attract, I think, is one of the best music videos of all time. Paul Abdul music videos were very important to me, so I did watch Keanu in the Rush music video a lot. And Keanu in Point Break, and he's doing the same thing and exact same thing in Speed. And it freaking works, man. Those are great, great movies. So I don't know what to tell you about Keanu, except he's the best. Do we have other questions?
Well, yeah, and I do think we're making our own point here of the fact that the Keanu Sans is ongoing.
Well, it's like a cyclical thing, right?
Yeah. Well, it does seem like that he goes through these periods of making like really good movies, and then sort of got miscast for a while until he found his groove again. You know, like in the '90s, he sort of was out there for a while being miscast, and then The Matrix is how he finished. And I don't think you could discount sort of. Like I said, he's very elemental. So like he really does the ones that work. They work because of him, not in spite of him. So I think that's important.
I kind of think The Devil's Advocate works in spite of him because, you know, Al Pacino and Charlize Theron are both at 11. Keanu's at like a 4.
Pacino is at like a 14 in that movie.
Like that's why that works. It doesn't work because of Keanu in any way. Like, he's just like a plain stucco wall.
We'll call it the exception to the rule.
Okay.
But I will say the Keanu Sans, the more modern Keanu Sans, kind of, you know, it started with the sad Keanu meme, I guess, which dates all the way back to 2010, which I did not realize. but then for me, it was really the kickstarting of Man of Tai Chi, which is the movie he directed. And he plays the villain in this movie. It's a very much a Indonesian. I'm going with Indonesian. Hold on.
Fact check for race sensitivity.
Nope, it's Chinese. Sorry.
Good thing we did that.
it's basically like an old Hong Kong martial arts movie, and he plays this ridiculous bad guy. And he directed it, which I thought was very fascinating because it has some really good martial arts action in it. And it was always, it's funny because when you watch it, it's the movie that you would think that people who love The Matrix would make. Like I was thinking, man, he must really have loved being in The Matrix.
He probably because, like did all the training and did all the reading.
Yeah,
and
because
all the reference material.
It felt like he just took the 10 years in between and like just kept going with his martial arts training, which is ridiculous because in The Matrix he's not doing like a ton of hardcore martial arts. He's doing a little bit of kung fu, and then he's Jesus. I don't know how that works. But I do think Man of Tai Chi is sort of like the essential starting point for when it started to come back, because I remember seeing it at Fantastic Fest, and Fantastic Fest is always a good barometer for what is going to be the weird meme, or it used to be at least, what is going to be the weird meme of the next year, like which cult hero is sort of coming back. And
that's where I heard about John Wick first, was Fantastic
Fest. Yeah, so, and I feel like that Man of Tai Chi, that screening really sort of pushed it into high gear, where I was like, oh man, remember how fun Keanu Reeves is?
Yeah.
Like, because we all suffered through the last two Matrix movies, let's be honest. So like the first Matrix was amazing and awesome, and it was all about like the Wachowskis and how they were doing this stuff that had never been done before and bullet time and blah, blah, blah. And then the last two movies were just the worst. Wait, just,
the second one is fine if you just stopped it 20 minutes early. Like, in terms of writing and like philosophically, still enjoy the early second Matrix, but right. Then yeah, it poops the bed,
and it didn't close well. And then Keanu made some poor choices in the 2000s, and so Man of Tai Chi, I think, is really the starting point of it. And you know, from there he just did John Wick. And now he's back.
He is literally all I remember from the later Matrix movies is Monica Bellucci. That's like literally it.
She was in that movie.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. What was like, that guy called?
The Merovingian.
The Merovingian. I remember just that he had a weird name.
Oh, I was like one of the people watching the Animatrix and playing the video game in between the two movies to make sure I knew all the.
I will say I will give a shout out to Keanu Reeves in the Nancy Meyers classic film Something's Gotta Give, where he plays a doctor in love with Diane Keaton, which is just the most delightful and relatable thing that he's ever done in his life, because who wouldn't be in love with Diane Keaton? So the fact that you have a movie where it's Keanu Reeves versus Jack Nicholson for the affection of Diane Keaton, that's why that movie is great. That's a great movie.
Well, I mean,
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who played the Merovingian? I don't know.
Is it not Vincent Cassell?
It possibly
is. Am I just pretending it was Vincent Cassell? Because
don't remember. Every time I try to picture him in my head, what I end up picturing is Matt Damon with the fake nose from one of the Ocean movies.
All I remember is that there is. Remember when the Cadillac?
The guy's name is Lambert Wilson.
Oh yeah, not Vincent Cassell.
Does he look like Matt Damon with a fake nose on?
Yeah.
The only thing I remember from the Matrix sequels is that the Cadillac, what was it, the CTS came out right about then, and they used it in that movie. And there's that one cool chase scene where like they're like ripping like the cars, and Lawrence Fishburne jumps and he smashes one and it goes flying. I was like, oh, that car looks cool. That's what I remember from the Matrix.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he uses a
sword to sever the gas tank, and then flips the car and shoots the gas tank with the machine gun.
Right.
Blows the car.
And then the orgy party. There was an orgy party in one of them, right?
The Merovingian place had a lot of tight.
No. There's like an underground cave. In the real world, not in the Matrix.
Oh, yeah, the orgy rave. Yeah, there was an orgy rave.
So that's what I remember about the Matrix sequels.
Well, that's fine, guys. If you would have seen like a lot of the, you know, original science fiction visually, it probably would have looked like an orgy rave, too.
What other Keanu questions do we have?
Okay, so here's some more questions from our wonderful listeners. This one is from Brack, who is at Breaking Brack on Twitter. Good one. Do you believe that Keanu is immortal?
Only as long as he lives in our hearts.
You know, if anyone deserves to be, it's Saint Keanu, full of grace. So, like, if I could will one person to be eternally here on this planet, it would be Keanu Reeves.
Nice. I guess I agree. I mean, why not, right? He also really doesn't age that much. Like, he's 52, and he looks in his 30s in John Wick, in my opinion. So he's ageless at the very least. The next question comes from at Celadon Kaylee. What is your favorite young Keanu performance, if you had to pick one?
Oh yeah, this is where I blew our wad and talked about Parenthood already.
is that your one?
It's really good. He gives this whole like speech about fatherhood and yeah, it's Parenthood.
Dave.
It's a great movie, guys. It's underrated.
I would probably go with Bill and Ted, since I did that already. Why not do speed as, like Joanna said, it was at a time period where we were young enough that just, like, you could pretend to be Jack around the playground and shit.
Jack Trabbin.
I definitely hung from the bottom of some monkey bars and pretended it was a bus a couple of times.
Gross, so. Ortiz. Gross.
Okay. Let's...
Man, you've got some big, round, hairy cojones. Gross, Ortiz. Gross.
Let's see. I guess it depends on what your definition of young Keanu is. Because I think I would try and squeeze the replacements in. But maybe a pre-Matrix Keanu, I guess, is young Keanu. In which case, I would have to go with, if not Speed, then Youngblood, which was his second film. Because it's a hockey movie, and I love hockey.
You know, I've never seen Youngblood.
It's good. You should watch it. It's got Rob Lowe.
Yeah. I went through like a hockey movie phase in college because I was dating a hockey player.
Did you watch Mystery Alaska?
I love Mystery Alaska. That is a great movie.
It's going to be a centerpiece of our eventual Russell Crowe episode.
Oh my God, the Crow songs! I'm here for it. I can talk about Master and Commander for an hour. Okay. But Youngblood I haven't seen, so I'll put it on the list. Put it on the list.
All right. And our last question, which I already have the answer to, from at Bobby Blowdart. This is from Robbie. This is, what's the latest on the Bill and Ted sequel? I had to look it up, but he did an interview this past week with Metro UK in which he said, creatively, the next Bill and Ted is ready to go, but they're having trouble getting it through the business section of Hollywood, which means that they're having rights and contracts issues, which usually means that a studio is not super keen on doing it. But he did give some plot details, and I wanted to read this because I would love to know what you guys think of this. In this movie, apparently, Bill and Ted are supposed to write, and we remember from the end of the second one, where Bill and Ted are supposed to write the song that's going to change the world. But when we see them again in the new movie, that hasn't happened, and they're much older, and they're still trying to figure out the song. And their like marriages are in disarray, and their kids are all grown up, and their lives are just terrible because they can't figure out this, how to do the song. And so then apparently Time, or what was the guy's name in the second movie?
Bogus Journey? I don't know.
Who tells them that they have to write the song?
Is it not Death? I don't know.
No, it's not Death. It's... I don't know. Whoever told them that comes back and tells them again, hey, the whole universe is going to explode if you don't do this.
So it's like, so they finally have to figure out the song. It's like, your kids, Marty. Something has to be done about your kids.
I mean, yeah, pretty much.
How can you do Bill and Ted without George Carlin, though? I don't think
that's a tough one.
Can or should, you know?
Yeah. So. I made a pitch once when I used to have a column about sequels that I would pitch that were probably never going to happen. I ended up doing Bill and Ted 3 and Godzilla, and then they both happened. It was weird. But I want it to be much more like music based, and I wanted Lady Gaga to be the villain, is what I sort of like threw that in.
I love it. So like a Wild Stallions movie.
Yeah, like they've, you know, they did the thing. Maybe like they broke off into a separate timeline, because why not in the Bill and Ted's like time verse? But there was a Wild Stallion versus like a modern music sort of like non-guitar rock, non-90s rival.
I'll be very curious. Like, I think most of our demographic for this podcast are people who are like around our age, a little older and a little younger. But if we have any like, you know, quite a bit younger listeners, I'll be very curious if they're like, what are you even talking about in terms of like the first decade of Keanu's career, or like, you know, if they're scribbling down movies that they should see and they're like, the TV show Parenthood was a movie once, or like whatever, not to like make us all sound elderly or you guys dumb, but like, you know, thinking about Keanu and the cyclical nature of his stardom, you know, I think especially because there have been these times when Keanu was like not making good movies and not on the radar, then maybe his earlier stuff doesn't feel essential. Cause like, say you like started really getting into movies in a time where it seemed like Keanu was like dead, done and gone, you know?
Sure.
And so then you like never bother to go back, you know. I don't know. Growing up as like a movie.
Well, I mean,
sorry, go ahead.
It sounds like what you're just describing is like you could be somebody who's like knows him as John Wick and have no idea what Bill and Ted is because why would you?
Or like whatever.
We've never
yeah.
talked about it. Well, I'd hope at some point like Speed's been on TBS or something, but like.
But kids don't, I mean, sorry, not kids. But like the youths don't do what we used to do, which is like, oh, turn on TNT or TBS on a Saturday morning and be like, what's this movie? I'll add it to my movie catalog because everything's on demand. I don't think that people just watch cable that way anymore. And that's how I watched a bunch of movies is like AMC, TNT, TBS, like late night TNT and TBS and like a lot of Turner influence in my life. But like, I don't, you know, like, Shawshank would always be on or whatever. And I don't think that people watch TV that way anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I do think, though, it helps that he's having a big comeback. Well, as we stated, he's not really having a comeback for us because we've been around for most of his 31-year career.
Call it a comeback. Yeah.
He's always been there. He's right. One of those big stars that's just sort of like always kind of there. And but John Wick's popularity is good because it does get people to go back. I think that that's how people discover movies now. They hear about the new movie,
right.
They go see it, and then they start filling up their Netflix queue.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, I think that,
It's possible there's a bunch of people who haven't seen Bill and Ted, which is sad.
That, but, like, I don't know if you guys do this, but, like, I try to, like, sort of tick things off, like, sometimes like I'll watch a movie because I'm like, it's stupid that I haven't watched the Harrison Ford, Jack Ryan movies. And so I'll just knock them both out. And so then I can like check that off the list. Like I've seen Claire and Present Danger and Patriot, you know, like Patriot Game, like, stuff like that where it's like,
shame on you, sir.
I don't have like,
shame on you.
I don't have like a burning need to see it, but I like, I feel stupid not having seen those movies. Cause Harrison Ford is one of our big stars. And I guess, yeah, I disagree with you guys that like, I'm glad that Keanu Reeves is coming back on the radar, on the pop cultural radar, if it means that people will go back and watch these movies that are great. Don't watch Walk in the Clouds, but definitely watch The Replacements.
I would like to second that. The Replacements is awesome. The Replacements is one of those movies that when you watch it now, you're going to be like, wait, who the hell is in this movie? Like, everyone's in that movie. Like, it's not just Keanu Reeves, but, like, Jon Favreau's in that movie. Gene Hackman's in that movie. Risa Fons is fantastic in that movie as the kicker. Like, it's just one of those movies where it's like, wait, like, here's all these people that are, like, I don't know, Keith David has a super small part in that movie. It's wild. So you should definitely see The Replacements is what I'm saying. Yeah, cool. Was there something else I wanted to say about Keanu?
What don't you want to say?
One more thing. Yes. Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead. And then I'll say my one more thing.
The movie Keanu from Key and Peele was not very good. It's not as good as I wanted it to be, I guess I'll say.
That's fair. I had a lot of fun with it. And I like that Keanu showed up to do the voice of the cat. Sorry, spoiler alert.
yeah, you're really going to be on the edge of your seat wondering when that cat's going to talk in that movie because it is not telegraphed.
I will say this. Another thing that goes to one of the reasons why I love Keanu, and it's more of the off-screen, he's just a really good guy type of thing, which is I have always found it really fascinating that he and Alex Winter, who were in Bill and Ted together, seem to still be pretty good friends. Like, to this day, like, Keanu did, you mentioned Deep Web very briefly, but that's Alex Winter's documentary about the web, and Keanu did the narration. Like, they've done stuff together, even though Keanu's career went one way and Alex Winter has sort of done a completely different thing where he's actually like an activist filmmaker now and he makes a lot of really interesting documentaries that are sort of politically charged. But
yeah, that's why I'm interested in the Bill and Ted sequels because it seems like they're a big part of the motivating like force that keeps this thing from not dying is that they both kind of like want to do it. So
right,
I'm into watching that. And I've watched duos reunite for less and enjoyed it. So
well, and it goes to the whole conversation this week around like, you know, sequels and remakes. And I was engaging with this conversation about people because they're remaking The Raid for American audiences.
You mean Dread?
Yeah. Oh. They're remaking The Raid / Dread / like every, anyway.
Wasn't very specifically a ethnically bent version of The Raid?
What?
No? How much do we know about this raid?
Oh, they're kind of, well, they're reimagining it. That's what Joe Carnahan said. Anyway, but a good point was made, which is normally, yes, I agree. Remakes, reboots, legacy sequels, all of these things have a tendency to be trash. But if they're done for the right reason, they can be really good and really interesting. So, like, we're going to talk about Logan in a couple weeks. If they made that movie because Hugh Jackman wanted to go out with a bang with an awesome, gnarly, R-rated Logan Wolverine movie, awesome. That could be awesome because they're kind of doing it for the right reasons. I feel the same way about Bill and Ted. Like, if it's really just that, like, Keanu and Alex Winters want to get back together and get into those characters again and do something silly, that's probably going to work out because it's sort of pure of intent. And I think those are the ones that we should never instantly judge as we shouldn't be getting these movies, because it's like, I don't know, let them do it. Like, they've worked really hard in their lives. Like, let them do it. It could be fun.
To your point about sort of like, which you made earlier about like Keanu is going to go his own, like, you can go your own way. Like, that's Keanu.
Keanu's going to Keanu. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like Keanu. We've gotten this far without mentioning the band Dogstar, which is a mistake. This is an important part of the whole Keanu thing in the 90s, which was his band Dogstar. He reportedly stepped away from Speed 2, despite the offered $11 million paycheck, his highest to date, because he wanted to tour with Dogstar. And then to like the other sort of like Saint Keanu, whatever, he took a pay cut of $1 million so that Al Pacino could be in The Devil's Advocate. Like, they couldn't afford Pacino. So Keanu's like, I want to act against Pacino. Take my money. And then he took a 90% pay cut for The Replacements so that Gene Hackman could get cast. Like, he's just great. He's just Keanu. And not every
movie he's the ultimate team player.
Yeah, not every movie he's made is great. We've discussed the upper limit of his, like, talent spectrum. But he is just, he's St. Keanu full of grace, the mayor of Los Angeles.
Yeah, his body of work is fantastic. Like, his career could... And I think this is the point I made when we did that article on Film School Rejects, which is his career is essential. Like, his career is elemental to the time that he has been a star. Like, you can't have this time without Keanu Reeves.
And like, for us especially, like, I think
people
our age, Keanu is going to be forever important for Bill and Ted, for Point Break, for Speed, for The Matrix. Like, it's just, it's crazy. You can't have the 80s and 90s without Keanu. So, we thought for a while in the aughts we could survive without Keanu, but, you know, I've heard that he's back, and I guess he's back, man.
He's super back. That's why we just did a whole episode about him.
Yeah, I was worried this one was going to be short, because I like, didn't have to do that much homework and stuff, but... No, man. Keanu-sans
is always
invigorated all of us. Your life has been homework for the Keanu episode.
My life has been homework for most of our episodes. Great, guys. I think we at least point you the direction in some Keanu Reeves movies you haven't seen. Or if not, go see John Wick 2. It's out there right now.
Yeah, you should definitely be seeing John Wick and John Wick 2.
And if there's anything we didn't mention... Though we tried to mention everything, but if there is any like a hidden gem that you feel like didn't get its due, please do tweet at us at Storm of Spoilers or email us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Or if you have a personal story about St. Kiona Full of Grace that you want to share with us, please do.
That does sound very much fun. Neil, where are we headed next week?
Ooh, we got all kinds of good stuff next week. Next week we are, and your homework for next week is, if you are so brave to see the Great Wall, which is the Matt Damon in China movie. I guess it's a movie technically, that is coming out this weekend. We are going to see it for a very specific reason, in that it involves dragons. And we are going to do a dragon episode next week. We're calling it the Dragon Pit episode. And we are going to talk about some of our favorite cinematic dragons. I'm not going to run the list right now. We'll just have to save that for next week. And we're also going to have maybe a little surprise next week. Maybe a little Batman-flavored surprise for you guys in your feeds next week. And so yeah, we're going to go near the Citadel to our own personal dragon pit.
Yes. Yeah, I'm expecting a little bit of Game of Thrones dragon chatter.
Personal dragon pit. I love that so much. But yeah, if you guys want to, I mean, we'll put this call out on Twitter, hopefully not like I did today 20 minutes before the episode, but we'll put on a call out on Twitter for like questions about dragon related stuff. But I feel like if you listen to the show, you probably like dragons. And if there's something you want to talk about, be it the Dragonlance books or Reign of Fire or...
Oh, there will be Reign of Fire.
We're definitely to cover
Reign of Fire. I already did my Sean Connery impression, right? Okay. I don't have to do that again. So, you know...
if you want to hear Joanna's Sean Connery impression again, just tweet at us. It's fine.
From Dragonheart. Anyway, it's... it's a dragon-tacular. I'm excited.
Sweet, guys. Until next week, where we are on leathery wings or Lego-y wings, where can people find your work? Let's start with Joanna, so we didn't let her talk for the beginning for like 20 minutes.
You can find me at Joe Wrote This or over on VanityFair.com, talking a lot about the Oscars.
And Neil Miller?
You can get me over on FilmSchoolRejects.com, where I'm also going to be doing some Oscar prediction stuff and some Oscar prop bets, I guess. And Twitter, @Rejects. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. Don't forget to follow the show @StormOfSpoilers and email us StormOfSpoilers@gmail.com with your dragon questions.
You Keanu your way, Keanu your way. Okay, sorry, Dave. Where can people find you, Dave?
They can find me online at, obviously everywhere online. I don't want people coming to my house. Good God, could you imagine what my life would be like if I was just like, meet me at the... It'd be weird. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. Right now I'm writing online at Thrillist.com and SplashReport.com. You can find my other podcast work at FightingInTheWarRoom.com. And... yeah, including my distaste for the Lego Batman movie.
Which is fascinating.
It's fascinating, but I feel like people who know my love of polygons might feel the pain of having to render certain things like Clayface as marketable toys with hard edges. Doesn't make sense. He's Clayface. Oh my God. It's like he's barely recognizable. He's like a stupid flat frog man. All right. So until next week, we'll get into maybe some of that. We will see you later.